New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello and welcome to Bad With Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. I'm Gabe Dunn. Our guest this week is Natasha Scott, who is actually the co-host of the podcast Two Black Girls, One Rose, but she's here to talk about where she started her career, which is in education and nonprofit and career development. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, how's it going, Gabe?
Good. It's so funny. So we had you on Just Between Us. We were talking about Two Black Girls, One Rose. And then you mentioned that you had a job in like career development and resume building. And I was like, actually, we've wanted to do a Bad With Money episode about that for a long time. So welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here and impart any wisdom I can.
So what is your background exactly?
Yeah. So my entire career has basically been in education, nonprofit education space. I did my master's at Teachers College, Columbia, master's in higher education. So basically studying the American higher education system. And after I graduated, I started working at Columbia in undergraduate career development, which is basically a fancy way of saying the campus career center. So I was there for 3 years, essentially working with Columbia undergrad students, helping them figure out what they want to do with their lives after college. Outside of Columbia, I've also been running a nonprofit, kind of a family nonprofit based in New Jersey called Dorson Community. I now run it with my husband, and we work with low-income first-gen students of color, primarily on college and career readiness. So yeah, I've been very much in the education nonprofit space, and then also have my other job as Two Black Girls, One Rose podcaster. So always very busy. I'm very much a hustler, very entrepreneurial. So one thing I do, the role I kind of definitely play in my personal life with my friends and family, and then also in professional, is always like the resident resume reviewer, interview prepper, helping people think through their lives. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So that's crazy. So I mean, that's really interesting and a diversion from like what people might think from the podcast. So, okay. So you started working with Columbia University students, which I think is very different than what would be in Dorson, right? Like
very, yes.
Extremely. What was the top, like when you were talking to Columbia University students, what was the top anxiety or what was the top question they had coming into you?
Yeah. So yeah, it's funny. Working at Columbia is very different because my career, even prior to Columbia, was mostly focused on working with low income high school students. And so Columbia was very much a different change for me. And the biggest concern with Columbia students. I think a lot of students at Columbia are, they're very gifted, obviously. They're, you know, everyone coming in is like valedictorian of their class. So they are failing for the first time. They're like getting a B for the first time. Like they're kind of really kind of testing out their independence and really understanding if the thing that they always said they wanted to be in life, you know, I want to be a doctor my whole life or whatever, if that's actually true. So a lot of like identity, a lot of self-exploration, a lot of self-development. My role is very much kind of challenging them because I can read a person very well if they're like, yeah, I want to be a doctor. And I'm like, okay, tell me more. And they can't really tell me anything, you know, like, okay, this is an identity that you've either it's been pressed upon you from family and influences or pressed upon yourself your whole life. And so I'm going to work with you to actually make sure this is what you want to do before you commit to going to medical school. So the biggest thing definitely was a lot of like self-exploration, self-development work with those students.
So, and now the type of people that you help more so are what you said, low income, first generation, going into college or career counseling. So how is that different? And like, what was the advice, you know, how is doing that sort of education different?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the students I work with through Dorson they're in high school, so a bit younger. They're kind of naturally self-exploring, or that's really our focus, is you should be in a space of exploration, right? You don't really know yourself yet, even to say like, I'm only going to pursue this thing. So similarly, a lot of self-development, a lot of self-exploration, a lot of very much focused on just exposure. So our career readiness program at Dorson, we'd always bring in different guest speakers, different professionals, primarily professionals of color from a wide variety of industries, just for them to come and meet students and talk to them about their careers and have the students ask them questions, and really just very much focused on giving exposure. You know, you might not understand or really care what engineer Bob is saying, but you can now make an informed decision to know, like, I don't want to go into engineering because I've heard him speak about it. He showed pictures about his job, and I understand that's not a fit for me. So that's really our focus with working with high school students.
So obviously there's like resume tips, you know what I mean? So you're saying you're reading through people's resumes. What are you looking for? And like, what are the things that are you're like, oh no, red flag immediately.
Mm-hmm. So a resume... The goal of a resume is really to get an interview. So I think everyone going in, they're thinking like, I need to get a job. I got to get a job. I got to get this job. I think even before we even get there, the goal of your resume is to get an interview. So a huge part of my job and, you know, working with students is really helping them really cater their resume to the jobs that they're applying to. Like very much specifically applying it to, or very much specifically aligning it to the job description. When you're applying for a job, all you really have is the job description to go off of, right? And then when the recruiter gets your resume, all they really have to go off of is your resume and the job description. So in putting together your resume, you are really trying to help the recruiter see that you're well aligned with this job. Right. And so being very intentional with making sure your resume is very specific and catered to the job description, because the goal is for the resume, for the recruiter to see the alignment and invite you in for another conversation. And that's really the focus. So I think not even getting ahead of yourself, like, I got to get this job, I got to like impress them. It's like, no. Just cater your resume to the job description. That's the first, the easiest thing, because you're just trying to get in to have an interview and have a conversation to bring your resume to life.
But you can't just copy paste what they say in the, so how do you finesse it?
Yeah. So not copy and pasting, which definitely a big no-no, but using some of the language that you're seeing in the job description. So if they're saying, if you're reading a job description and it's like, manage this, manage that. If they're using the word manage a lot, you want to make sure your resume is very much doing the same thing. So not copy and pasting like whole phrases verbatim from the job description, but just really paying attention to the keywords, the buzzwords that clearly seems to be very important in this job, and making sure that you're reflecting some of that in your resume.
How far can you stretch sort of fibbing?
you got to definitely do some finessing with making yourself sound as good as possible. I think there's a level of, it really depends on the industry, but the level of like fibbing that you can get away with. If you're going into like hard sciences, like engineering, and there's certain things that you're really going to have to know, and it's going to be a core part of the job, you can't kind of lie and say, yeah, I know how to code in Python when you don't, because that's a core part of the job. But I think in certain, like, for instance, back to the example of like managing, a common challenge you see people facing and trying to like level up and advance in their career is, you know, you need to come with management experience. It's like, all right, how do I bring management experience? I've never managed anybody before. Like, how do I say that? So a little bit of finessing that you can do is just getting really creative. Okay, I might not have managed, you know, direct reports, but maybe I helped manage a project that had a team of colleagues. And maybe I was one of the co-managers of that. You know, you can like, you have to get really creative and really think through your experiences. Okay, maybe I didn't manage people directly. Like I didn't have interns or assistants reporting to me, but did I manage projects? Did I manage initiatives? And can I kind of finesse it to make it seem like I managed some staff in a way? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally does. In terms of resume, it's been so long since I've had to make one and I'm old. What order are things going in? So let's say it's like your name up top, and then like, what's the order of a resume, and should it be one page?
That's a good question. So generally, it really depends. Generally, one page is fantastic. I would say if you're going on to a second page, you want to fill up at least half of that second page. So you need to have at least enough experiences to fill up half. I think when you're around probably, you know, mid 30s, middle career, you've been in the game, say you graduated college at 23, you've been working for 10 years. I think it's totally fine to go on to two pages. You've had enough experiences to fill up the two, and fitting to one is tough by then. If you're fresh out of college, I mean, you got to fit it to one. You know what I mean? And then in terms of the order of events, there's so many different ways that you can put a resume together. It could be chronological. It could be more, there's some resume, I'm trying to remember the term, or you group it by skill set. But generally, yes, name up top. Typically, education section comes next. Sometimes education section can come last. I would say if you're middle career, you've been in the game 10, 15 years, the recruiter reading your resume is more focused on what you can do in the job and care less about where you went to school. So that can kind of push, that's where you see those education sections push, you know, more to the back. But yeah, then you dive into your experiences. So your professional experiences, you might divide it into, here's my management section, here's my like strategy section. You can divide it up by different like job function areas. At the back, you might have, it depends. If you're going into like a more academic career, your awards and publications is definitely going to be a big section. If you're going into like project management or something project-based, a project section. So it really can depend on the industry. If you're going to the arts and you've been working in film or something, you might have a section of like projects and festivals, like, and, you know, listing out all of those. So really kind of depends per industry, but generally, you know, your name section, your experience section, and then the rest is kind of like flexible.
Oh boy, can your finances take a hit during the holidays? I've definitely had stuff come up that I, you know, forgot about last minute, gifts for people, realizing I don't have something for someone's plus one or significant other, trying to put together meals. I mean, you can think you've thought everything through for the holidays, and oh boy, might it take a while to recover financially. But we all get it. You know what I mean? Like, we're trying to spend time with people and make the most of it and have this magical time that we all look forward to all year long. We spend more than we should during the holidays. Take control of your finances by using a Chime checking account with features like no monthly or maintenance fees, fee-free overdraft up to $200, or get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Learn more at chime.com/badmoney. I am notorious for forgetting about automatic payments, and then I overdraft. I have had a history of overdrafting my account. It's horrible. There's tons of fees. There's even fees for going below a certain number, even if you aren't overdrafting. Like, it is such a relief to have a Chime account that allows you to overdraft up to $200 with no fees. It's a financial tech company with a sense of community. You can have temporarily increased overdraft limits with boosts from friends. Join the millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. Chime helps with fee-free overdraft up to $200. Your next deposit is applied to your balance. Get spotted on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. No monthly fees or maintenance fees. Over 50,000 fee-free ATMs. To date, Chime has spotted members over $32 billion in transactions through SpotMe. Friends give friends a boost. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to temporarily increase a friend's SpotMe limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to temporarily raise your limit. Set up direct deposit in your Chime account. After a qualifying direct deposit of $200 plus, Chime will notify you to enroll in SpotMe. With an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to $200 on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. Your next direct deposit is applied to your negative balance. Chime never charges overdraft fees for using SpotMe. Enjoy the holidays while keeping your financial goals on track with Chime. Open your account in 2 minutes at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Direct deposit timing depends on submission of payment file. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs and for OTC withdrawals.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do they care about where you went to school?
Also depends. If you're going into, I mean, it's going to be very, very generalized, but if you're going into like banking or consulting and working at one of the big five or big three, names in those industries tend to carry. When I say carry, it means they just get you in the door quicker for an interview. It doesn't mean you're going to get the job, but you might get an interview quicker because you went to a big name school versus not. So I would say in some industries that are a little bit, some industries that get high volume applicants. So when I was working at Columbia, they did on-campus recruiting. So big tech, big consulting, big finance would come on campus specifically because they want to recruit all the Ivy students. They're getting high volume amount of applicants. And so they really care, you know, the fact that they're spending their budget, their recruiting budget on going and specifically recruiting from these schools. They obviously are showing that they care about the name of the schools. But I would say other industries, maybe like film and television, they want to see what you can do. They want to see your work, you know, so the school's going to care way less.
That sucks, though, for like the industries where they just look at what school you went to and then move on.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's not fair. I could talk all day. I have a lot of thoughts about on-campus recruiting and just that whole industry. It brings an issue of access, right? If I'm a student from a small, you know, a small HBCU in the South that is interested in finance and banking, I'm already behind the curve because they're not coming to recruit at my school. And then when I submit my application, I'm going to be somewhere in the middle or the back of the pack because all the Ivies, all the big, you know, the Ivy plus students are pushed to the top because their name carries. So it's obviously an issue of access and discrimination, and typically will impact students from low income and communities of color.
Yeah, I was going to ask the old study that they would do where they would say, oh, we sent in the same resume, but it was like from someone named Jerome. And then we sent in a resume from someone named Michael. And it, you know what I mean? Like, and so it was like this thing of like Jerome Lopez didn't get the interview, but Michael Warrington did or whatever. Is that like still the case, or is that sort of an old study?
Well, racism still exists.
I know, but yeah, anecdotally, in your experience,
mm-hmm. you're still going to find recruiters that have their own implicit biases. So there's definitely ways for them to try to, you know, undercut that and really just go based on merit and resume and not. But these are still humans, right, that are reviewing these resumes and are still going to bring their own implicit biases. I think a huge part of my job at Columbia, or just in general, even in my life with my friends, we can talk resume all day. We could talk interviewing all day, but let's talk about networking. Let's talk about, like, really bringing life to these documents and having people meet you and get to know you for you, because you do have to be realistic that there is going to be judgment with things like name. You know, it's not, you know, it's 2023, it's not 1950, but people still are going to be prejudiced against Jerome Lopez, you know,
and who went to a historically Black college or university. They'll see that.
Exactly. So really, it's how do I meet people? How do I connect with alums from my school who are there? How do I, you know, work my LinkedIn and try to connect with recruiters and really put in that extra step so I'm not just a resume that's sent off into the void?
What do you mean make the documents shine, like show you?
Yeah, I think I always say, anywhere that you apply, anywhere that you submit a resume, always get onto LinkedIn and see if there's a recruiter that you can connect with and set up a phone call with. Always look into your second and third connections and see if there's anyone from your alma mater. I always advise people to, any job that you apply to and you're going to send off your resume, always also try to get on LinkedIn or think through your connections and see if there's anyone that you can connect with at that place as well. So you're not just relying on this piece of paper to tell you who you are, but you're also relying on hopefully building a connection, a personal connection with someone at that company that can help bring that paper to life and help bring you into being a real person behind that piece of paper.
If you're connecting with someone on LinkedIn or an alumni, what should you say?
Connecting with alumni, I think you just first start off by pointing out that we both graduated from the same institution, see that you're working at insert name of company. I've been interested in, you know, exploring careers there, whatever. I would love to meet with you and kind of just learn more about your experience. So not bringing in any type of energy of like, I need something from you. But of course, the underbelly of all of this is like, I need a job here and I would love to get your like input or connections of some sort. But you're really making it just like, I see you're working somewhere. I would love if I could get, you know, 15 minutes of your time to do a Zoom or a coffee chat, you know, give them some dates, make it very easy for them. You just want to kind of talk about their experience and learn from them. People generally love talking about themselves. Most people, I would say everyone, but most people want to help in some way. And the lowest hanging fruit of helping is to meet with someone for coffee. You know, I'm not asking you to mentor me. I'm not asking you to get me a job. I'm asking you to just like meet for coffee for 15 minutes. And most people find like, if they have the time and they will make the time for it, that it's a low hanging fruit for them.
What about if you reach out on LinkedIn?
Like how to craft the message?
Yeah.
Same way, same thing. So, hey, I just wanted to connect with you. I see that you are an alum from my school. You're working at X company. And yeah, would love to connect with you over coffee. I just would love to pick your brain and kind of learn more about your experience. Same thing.
It's funny that LinkedIn is still a thing that matters to people.
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn, I'm not super active on LinkedIn. I just, with the podcast and Instagram is enough. It just, Instagram and TikTok got me. But some people are very, very active on LinkedIn and it definitely matters. I have friends who work in recruiting that they, on their screen, they keep LinkedIn open. Like as a recruiter, that's just like a huge playground for them and a huge workspace for them. And an active part of their job in recruitment is fielding messages, sending messages, looking around at other companies and learning what are they doing, who's working where. So LinkedIn absolutely matters. And it's probably the best platform to use to find alumni connections and to just run a quick search of a company to see who works there and to see if you have any connections to anyone there. It's pretty much LinkedIn is the way to go to find those things.
How much do they check your resume? Like call your you know, references or check, did they actually go major in the X, Y, and Z, or did they actually work at a certain place?
Usually the background check and the checking of references comes when you're like in the final round. It depends on the company, whether they've either given you an offer already or it's right before they're going to give an offer. Then they ask, can you submit a few references? I mean, it depends, but generally people do check references. They might not call all three. They might just call one just to like make sure you're not a psycho. But submitting references and keeping good relationships, or at least keeping some soft relationships with your old supervisors or old colleagues, is important, because there's generally going to be a time where you're going to be asked to submit references. And so you want to make sure you have some people that could say something nice about you.
Who else could count as a reference if, let's say, this is your first job, or let's say you burned your last job?
Yeah. I mean, a manager, supervisor is always the best. Colleagues in some instances. I mean, some places will tell you specifically, like, we need a reference from a manager, supervisor. So you kind of have to go with what they're asking for. But if it's open, then colleagues, people that you've worked with, people who are lateral to you. If it's really wide open, you can ask mentors, people who know you in a capacity. You generally want someone who can speak to your work ethic. So your auntie, your mom, like obviously family members generally know, but people who know you in a work capacity.
Like a, if it's your first job, could be like a professor.
It could be, yep. It could be a professor.
Or somewhere you volunteered.
Absolutely. Somebody who can speak to your work ethic, who knows you in some type of professional, like just not purely personal perspective. So yeah, volunteer, supervisor, professors, research advisors, things like that.
So what do you do about like gaps in your resume?
Like how to speak about them? Or
how do you speak about it? Or how do you, let's say you're not even going to get the job interview because of a big gap. How do you explain the gap? Or what's the best way, like on the resume, to be like, this is where do we explain the gap? If like, it's like 2012, and then the next thing shows up in like 2017.
That's a great question. Gaps, particularly long gaps, can be tricky. Those, I mean, there's nothing you can really do. You can't fill in some fake stuff. So you kind of have to just show it how, you have to just structure your resume in however way you can. But that's where the networking and trying to talk with a recruiter and humanizing your resume really comes into play, because that can be alarming with it's just on paper. And then I think the cover letter is where you can do some of that explaining off bat, just explaining it off bat, like I haven't worked in X number of years. This is what I was, you know, challenged with, or for whatever reason, and I'm back in. Also, you want to really explain what were you doing during that time off, not without, you know, without getting too personal, or if it's like a medical leave or something like that, but showing how you, even if it is a little bit of fibbing, showing how you maintained productivity and what you were working on or projects or volunteering or whatever during that leave. But the cover letter, and then trying to explain that best you can through an informational or some connection with a recruiter, can help.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What do you say in a cover letter generally? I always found them to be like, oh my God, are you kidding me? You need me to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cover letter is where you kind of want to highlight two of your best attributes or projects. So things that are on your resume, but bringing a little more context and kind of like bragging about them a little bit deeper. So if you, let's say you're going into the film industry or something like that, and you worked on a film that you're super proud of, it's going to be on your resume, but the cover letter is an opportunity for you to like give a little bit more context and talk about the big award that you won and what that award really signified, or to name drop, you know, my team included these people on it. So some of that stuff, you can't really take up all that space on the resume, but in the cover letter, you can dive in deep on some of that.
Would it be like, if it is a medical, I'm just thinking about like in a cover letter sort of being like, and so what happened was, you know, my mom had cancer and I was taking care of her for a year and that's what this gap was. But in the meantime, like, I think like, is it kind of like almost like a college essay where you're explaining like what had happened was?
The whole sob story. Yeah. So there's a level of disclosure that you yourself have to be comfortable with. I don't think what we're not asking you to do is to air out your mom's whole business. But, you know, I took a leave to serve as a caregiver for a family member. It was a difficult time. But during that time, I, you know, built my blank skills. I, you know, XYZ, like, so giving very quickly, succinctly, here's what happened. And then very quickly after that, talking about what you gained from that experience, what you learned, what are you going to take from that experience and bring into this new position?
What if you had legal troubles? Like, what if you went to prison?
If you went to prison, yeah, that's a different story.
I know. I just am like, oh God, it's so rough out there.
Yeah, it is. That's a different story. I wouldn't advise you to write all that in your cover letter. That's something that they're going to discover in the background check anyways. But again, for me, it really comes back to trying to connect with people, finding contacts, finding alum, even just making a contact through a recruiter and getting to build rapport with somebody who can understand you and you can explain some of this to. So it's not just your resume that's doing the explaining and it just gets, you know, thrown in another pile.
That's so wild how much networking is part of it and how gatekept networking is.
Yeah, it's like, I read some statistic, I don't know how they measured this, but probably like Forbes or one of them, that I think like 80% or 70% of jobs nowadays are gotten through referrals. It's not through the online portal and submitting your resume. So you really have to work smarter. You know, there's some people who work very hard. They send out resumes all day long and all, you know, they go to the coffee shop for hours and just like beast out and send out these resumes and are beasting these cover letters. That's working really hard. If you want to work smart, you got to supplement that work with networking, connecting with recruiters, connecting with alum, talking to people in your network, just letting everybody know I'm looking for jobs. Particularly if you find a company that you're really passionate about, talking about it with people and seeing through that conversation, do you know anyone? I know you have a friend that kind of does something in consulting. Like, I don't know if she works at this company, but can you connect me with her? I would love to talk with her. Because maybe it may not be your immediate network, but someone in your network might know somebody who might know somebody. So that networking and that just getting comfortable with speaking about your dreams and sharing with people what's going on with you, that has to supplement the just sending out resumes. It has to.
Maybe going to panels where people who work at that place are at the panel. Just trying to think of like free stuff or stuff that you could do.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies now, particularly this is like a remnant of the pandemic, do like webinars and like virtual events and just being engaged in what those companies are doing and putting on. And those are things that you can speak to when you speak to a recruiter. You know, I saw you guys did a virtual panel on blah, blah, blah. I was in the audience. I thought it was really interesting. These are things that you can mention in your cover letter. You know, I'm so passionate about what your company does. In fact, at the last panel you had last month, I learned blah, blah, blah. So really showing people that you're engaged in the community. But some of that work is done on paper, of course, but some of that has to be done in person and on the phone and through LinkedIn and through connections. Especially when you're talking about some of these more, I would say, quote unquote, non-traditional people who've taken leave of absences or have gaps in their resume, or if you're a bit older than the typical applicant, that is where that is even more crucial because it's hard out there. Like, just being honest, it's just hard out there.
So in terms of interview prep, what does that look like? And what do you do once you get to that stage? What are you advising people on?
Yeah. So interviewing, I always say, like, no one is born just coming out the womb interviewing well. Like, it's a skill. And with any skill, it takes a lot of practice. It's pretty unnatural for most people to like talk about themselves and brag about themselves, right? It just doesn't come natural to a lot of us. And so with practice, you just get comfortable talking about yourself and talking about yourself in a positive manner. And so interview prep is crucial. I don't advise people to just roll up raw to an interview. Like, you really should be getting in some practice with a friend, with a colleague, with a coach or whatever. But yeah, interview prep is really, most interviews now are what we call behavioral interviews. So they're asking questions like, tell me about a time when. Very open-ended. Tell me about a time when you didn't get along with a colleague. Tell me about a time when you worked on a project that you're really proud of. Tell me about a time when, insert whatever. These are basically questions that allow you to kind of do some storytelling, essentially. So probably one of the first steps that I would do with students when it comes to interview prep is really sitting with your resume and getting to know your resume. Like refreshing your memory on what are all the things that you did. Thinking through some of these stories, positive stories, proud moments, negative moments, and really just doing some self-reflection. We tend to forget what we did, you know? We tend to forget some of our biggest accomplishments or most proud moments. So step one is really sitting with your resume and just doing a little bit of self-reflection and writing down, just jotting down some stories. Like I can use this story for these types of more positive questions. I can use these stories for like teamwork questions. I can use these stories for more like negative or weakness stories. And so that's really the first step, is just kind of like recollecting. And then from there is just prepping, kind of like drilling, doing mock interviews. So employing a friend, employing, you know, an old colleague or whoever, sending them the job description for the job. You can easily Google like mock behavioral questions, you know, and then just having them, you know, do a mock interview with you and just giving you that practice of telling some of these stories. And the biggest thing with interviewing is, particularly with these like behavioral stories, very open-ended stories, people have a tendency to do one of two things: either ramble, so just like endlessly keep talking and then you almost forget what the damn question was, or be too succinct and not give enough. So there's a model that, like a method that we used to, or I used to teach at Columbia, that you can Google and also find, called the SARA model. It stands for situation, action, results, and application. So in any story, behavioral-based story, you generally want to like run your story through this model. So situation S, you start off by just laying out the situation. So if it's like, tell me one a time when you worked on a team. You lay out the situation. At my last job, I worked on a website rebuild with a team of, you know, four colleagues in the marketing department. So boom, lay out the situation. A is action. So what are the actions that you took as part of this situation? So my role in this story or in this project was doing all the research, you know, managing all the meetings and the deadlines and setting up the Asana and then putting together the final presentation. So literally you can like use your hand, like boom, boom, like one, two, three. So help you to kind of lay out the actions. Is results. So what were the results of your actions? So as a result of our presentation, our pitch was, you know, selected. I got to lead the team through the design and blah, blah, blah. So you lay out what were the results of that. Probably the most important piece that most people tend to forget is A, the application. What did you learn from this experience that you're not going to apply into this new job? So from that experience, I really was able to hone my management skills, got more comfortable with public speaking and putting together pitch decks. And that's something that I know is going to directly align with this role as the director of whatever, whatever at this job. Tying it all together, without that last piece of tying it together and aligning it to the job that you're in the chair interviewing for, without doing that, you're kind of just sitting there telling a nice story. So you really got to round it out. And yeah, the SARA model, I say just kind of run all your stories through that. Keep it in the back of your mind. If you're doing a virtual interview, keep a sticky note that says SARA on your laptop. So as you're telling your story through Zoom, you can like guide yourself through the SARA model. And that really can, like any behavioral question, you can run through that model and it can help you keep very neat and tight with your answers, by also giving enough context, but not so you're rambling.
What do you do about questions like, when did you not get along with a coworker, or what's your greatest weakness?
So for the weakness question, you know, everyone says I'm a perfectionist. That's like the most overused like weakness, or like I work too hard. Like that's tired. You want to find a quality or a characteristic or a weakness that, it can be a true weakness, but won't impact the job that you're applying for too much. So I'm trying to think of a good example. If I'm, let's say I'm applying for like an engineering role or something, my job is mostly going to be doing like sitting behind a computer, doing some coding, whatever. A great weakness could be like public speaking. It's something I struggle with. It could be public speaking or like putting on, doing presentations, something like that. It's something I struggle with and it's something I'm working on. You always want to point out how you're improving it. So always put a positive
I'm
spin.
Taking an improv class.
Right.
Or something.
And it's a weakness that is a true weakness. So you are showing some vulnerability and some honesty in my role as the engineer. Like it's not something that's going to impact the role too much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really smart. That's extremely smart. How do you get someone to hone in on, okay, this is what I actually want to do?
I mean, I think you have to start with like doing some honest self-reflection. I think that's a missing step that a lot of people take, particularly adults. So if we're talking high school, college students, you know, they have more time, they have 4 years to kind of figure it out. But adults who are got bills to pay, right? They're desperate to get back into the workforce or, you know, whatever, you know, don't take as much of that time to really do the self-reflection and to really ask themselves, like, what is it that I want to do? They're kind of just desperate to find something, understandably, but you're not going to perform well in an interview for a job that you generally don't care about. You know, it's going to be hard for you to sell yourself for something that you actually don't even really care about. So really doing that intentional work to understand, like, what did I really like about my last job? You know, it maybe it's a job that you told yourself you hated. I hated that damn job. Couldn't wait to get out of it. Sit and really challenge yourself. What were the parts that I liked? Like, what were the, if I had to really boil down to what I did every day, what is something about the job that if my job was just that, I would have been happy. If I could have just led meetings or just put together pitch decks, I would like that. So really doing that reflection work to figure out what is it that I really like and want to lean into, and then trying to do the research to understand what are the jobs that are going to really cater to those things that I like. Sometimes it does take talking with a coach. I would say, so I'm in my early 30s. I've been working for over 10 years now. My friends are around the same age. I have a few friends who are seeing a career coach now. They're at an age where they're like trying to maybe transition into something else. They are kind of bored of the industry they've been in. They're at like a transition period. And sometimes you get stuck because you don't really know how to figure out how to move forward or where you want to move forward to. So sometimes if you have the means, investing in a coach to help with one, keeping you accountable to make sure you're applying for jobs and doing the work, but then also to ask you some of these hard-hitting questions so you can really tease out your experiences and find yourself in a position where you will be more, you know, at peace or happy with your job.
Yeah, my boyfriend, who's a big fan of your show, he changed from being a CPA to being a software engineer. And he was like, you know, it was a risk. And he just went and took a coding boot camp and was like, okay, let's go. And that was like a big risk, and leaving a job that was, you know, comfortable and to in order to do something else is like a very, yeah, it's very scary. When you are asked, like when they say, what salary are you looking for? What do you do?
Mm-hmm. So you always want to do your own research and understand the range for where you're living in, whatever city or region that you're in. So, you know, salaries in New York City look very different than Tallahassee, Florida. So understanding the range, so what you're working with, and then also like company size and budget. So you can't ask a small business with 3 employees the same amount that you could ask like a huge corporation. So doing your own research, Glassdoor is a great website. You know, most people know it. There's probably others by now, but understanding the range. So you have a estimate and like a rough number, the rough range in your head. When it comes to salary negotiation, generally the rule is you don't want to give out a number first. You want them to come first with the number. And then if you really are pushed into a corner, you want to give a range. So never give just one specific number. Give yourself a nice range. Maybe have a number, like your goal number in your head, and give a range that's like 5K below and 5K above. That's like a good way to put it. Because then negotiation starts. They're always going to lowball. You know, companies are always going to want you for the cheapest that they can get. And so you want to make sure that you're going to land somewhere in the range that you're comfortable with.
So let's say you're having trouble finding a job, but you really want to work for a certain company, or you find a job that's like a lower level than what you were normally doing, or like a lower salary, but you're like, maybe, is it worth it to do that to try to like get in with this company? Is it like, because I find a lot of people I talk to are like, oh, I'm overqualified for this job. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you can afford to take a pay bump or a pay cut, that is sometimes a strategy to break into a new industry. It's really dependent on the person and whether they can afford, you know, to be making less. Yes, in some instances you're not always trying to get a job that's going to catapult you to another level. Sometimes you are making a lateral move. Sometimes you are trying to break out of, you know, tiny nonprofit and break into national nonprofit or something, and you might need to move laterally. So you might be going from a manager position to a manager position and might not be making that much more. But now you have your foot in the door at a place with way more contacts and whatnot. So sometimes there is strategy and a benefit to doing that. But you do have to ask yourself, like, financially, can I afford it?
My final wrap up sort of question is like, what do you do if you were like fired from your last job? Like, not just like laid off, like, oh, there were budget cuts, but like you were like fired. Like, how do you then talk about that to the next job?
Yeah. So yeah, definitely finessing and really sitting with yourself during your interview prep to understand how can I talk about that experience and what I learned from it. So really focusing on putting a spin. Everything is involving a little bit of a spin. I was let go in all honesty because, you know, me and another colleague, you know, couldn't get along or there was issues, whatever. But, you know, what I learned from that experience is, you know, not taking things personally, not, you know, letting that get in my way. And, you know, here's how I've done that work already, you know, outside of work. I volunteer, I've taken up new roles, I've gotten comfortable with, you know, working with people, different personalities. So it's kind of owning it, not placing blame or talking negatively about your past work experience. That goes a long way too. The way you talk about where you came from, particularly if you were fired there, being able to own completely and take accountability, and then immediately backing it up with a spin of how you've improved and how you're currently actively doing better.
Yeah, I love that. It's wild, but it's all sort of like performance. What's something, if someone's like discouraged or they're like, you know, they've been sending resumes for a long time, or like, how do you maintain, if they're listening to this, like, how do you keep your head up basically? And like, if I was listening to this and I was back at the time when I was sending out resumes, I think I would be like, okay, let me change strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not get so discouraged and like hate yourself?
Yeah. Job hunting is like not for the faint of heart. It is a full-time job within itself. Most people that are job hunting already have jobs. And so it's like, imagine the stress of your current job and now you're stressed out trying to find another job. Like it sucks. Just, I can acknowledge that 100%. I think it's similar to, honestly, a little similar to online dating. Sometimes you got to take a break. Sometimes you got to take a weekend and just like not apply for shit and just like mentally take a breather from it, because it is, you do, you know, feel as if you're getting beat up a little bit. I think what you said about re-strategizing, you know, sometimes sitting and thinking like, what can I do differently? I've been going at it in the same way and it's not working. What do I need to change up? Maybe you need to, you know, invest a little bit more time on LinkedIn and just do a round of just like sending out messages to recruiters and try to set up informationals, and you take a break from just the job hunt, the resume, you know, submitting. Spending some time like re-strategizing a bit. And then also just like trying your best not to take things as personally. you don't ever know what the recruiter is like actually looking for. And it's not that you're not good enough. It just, they found somebody who was just a better fit and has nothing to do with your experiences not being good. You're going to be a good fit for a job. But the ones that you're not getting is because you weren't a fit for whatever reason that you will literally never know. So not taking it too personal, not too hard. And when you do start to get more like very down in the dumps, just check in with yourself and take a day breather, take a 2-week breather, re-strategize.
It's harder when you don't have a job and you're not going from one job to another, where you're like kind of desperate and you don't have a job. And so you're like fumbling to try to find a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think leaning on support as well. So, you know, your resume should be looked at by at least 2 people. It shouldn't just be you sitting with your resume. Send it to a friend, send it to a cousin, have at least 2 others mark it up and tell you to chop it, screw it a little bit and tell you make these changes. So, yeah, just making sure your documents, your resume, your interview prepping, like you're putting in the work to kind of become your best self and utilizing your supports around you so you're not alone in the process.
This is extremely helpful. Where can people find you and more about you and your work?
Yeah. So we mentioned before, I'm a co-host of 2 Black Girls, 1 Rose podcast. We uncover what we can learn about modern dating, love, and relationships through popular television. You can find us and listen to us anywhere podcasts are found. So definitely a different side to my life. I'm, you know, a lot more fun over there talking about TV and laughing with my best friend. And yeah, find us everywhere podcasts are found. 2 Black Girls, 1 Rose. Find us on Instagram. Join us on Patreon for all of our bonus content. And then you can also check out our nonprofit Dorson Community if you want to get involved with giving back to very motivated, super bright, high achieving students from the inner cities of Newark, New Jersey. We're always looking for volunteers, always looking for donations. And that's dorsoncommunity.com, DORSON.
Yay. I love that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you, love you, bye!
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.